Right, hello everybody, and welcome to this special audio training, teleclass slash chat with a very special guest and a very good friend of mine and a brilliant marketer and all-round superhero, Vicky Fraser.
Hi, Dom.
I was just hoping you were there because we had a pre-arranged signal, haven't we, Vicky, because you've got the cold at the minute, so you're going to mute yourself when you're coughing. So if Vicky goes off,
yes.
She hasn't killed us, she's just recovering.
I'm just coughing my lungs up.
So Vicky, for anybody who doesn't know who you are and what you do, you've played a big role in my sort of business career so far, which we'll talk about in a minute, but tell everybody what you do and a bit more about who Vicky Fraser is and how she helps people.
Okay, well, I am Vicky Fraser, as you have already helpfully said, and I help business owners, I show business owners how to be a bit more interesting, how to stand out from the sea of sameness and be noticed, because if, you know, it doesn't matter how much you spend on marketing, how much effort you put into it, if nobody notices you in the first place, the rest of it is utterly pointless. So I help people to really just stand out from the crowd, like a flamingo at a penguin party.
Love it, flamingo. So how do you how did you stumble across this superpower that you have then?
I think I've always just been a bit of a weirdo, and I don't know, it's just because I've never really followed the herd, and I've never really blended into the crowd, and until the last few years, I guess it's always, I don't know, I've always been a bit freaked out about really embracing my weirdness, because we're all weird really. And you know, it's there are good evolutionary reasons for blending in, which we can talk a little bit about later because it's important. But yeah, I don't know, I started pole dancing 12 years ago, I started trapeze classes 5 years ago, I've always had a short hair tension span, so my hair's always looked big. I have feathers, not hair, so and you know, I've never kind of, you know, I don't pay any attention to what's fashionable, because I don't know, I just don't really know how fashion works, and so often I tend to look like I've got dressed in the dark, which suits me fine. And yeah, I don't know, and it, you know, just there's a bazillion and one copyright, because I'm a copywriter by trade. That's, you know, I write words for money. That's kind of how I got started. And there's a million and one of us out there, and we all basically do the same thing. Some of us are better than others. But, you know, it's how do I stand out from all of those other copywriters saying the same old thing and charging the same old price and, you know, behaving the same way. And that, you know, that's a recipe for disaster, really, as a business owner. So that's kind of how I got started. I realized I was very good at helping other people find what makes them different.
Yeah, you are, for sure you are. And so how have you implemented that in your own business then, with your, you know, by making yourself stand out amongst other copywriters by embracing your weirdness and shouting about it, or what?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways that I've done it. So to start with, I mean, you know this, and probably a bunch of people who listen to this class will know it. I write emails every day, but they're not sales emails in the traditional sense that it's like buy my stuff and benefits, it's stories from my life and stuff that I find interesting and the rest of it. So I put my personality into everything I do, and I talk about, you know, I get people who I've never heard of emailing me and saying, oh, how's the dingle? And the dingle is our house that we're renovating, and I'm like, who are you? And it's because I tell these stories in my marketing, you know. On my website, you can tell that, you know, I bring the whole Runaway with the Circus thing into my branding and into what I do. There are, you know, my photographs on my website are not your usual kind of boring corporate headshots. They're me on an aerial hoop or on a trapeze or juggling, or, you know, generally being me, I guess. So did that answer your question?
No, definitely. Yeah, no, it did. Yeah, I think it answered all of them. No, it did. Yeah. You're dead right what you're saying about the personality, and I get the same thing. Somebody who was it, Jennifer, who just joined my inner circle last month. We've done a couple of coaching calls together, and I'm just talking, Vicky, to give you a chance to have a cough if that's what you needed to do.
Thanks. Exactly what I was doing.
I'll keep doing this every now and again. It's not to share the limelight, it's just to, you know, I've got your help in mind.
Thank you. Oh, you're very thoughtful.
And well, it was just interesting. She said on the call, she said she's booked up for boot camp and stuff as well. And she said, you know, because I asked them, you know, I said, how did you stumble across me and stuff? And she said she did the 33 ideas, saw some stuff in the Facebook group, and like she feels like she knows me. She feels like she knows me grandma, and you know, and like my kids, and like all this kind of thing. And once you're doing it, which hopefully at the end of this call, a lot more people will be more prepared to do it and put their personality in and try and be a bit different. Once you're doing it, it's like, it's a bit like a drug, isn't it? It's like, oh wow, you know, I can't believe I wasn't doing this before. But it's a hard place to get to, isn't it, if you've never done that?
It is a hard place to get to, and I'll explain exactly why in a minute, because I found this really, really interesting. But just before I forget, because I have the memory of a goldfish, I can give you an example from my own business, like you just said with your Jennifer. Mm-hmm. One of my superheroes, because I've got a business mentoring group, much like Dom's, and I call them my superheroes, and that's, you know, it's another way of differentiating myself. Tanya, who is one of my superheroes, wrote an email a while ago to say, I was initially drawn to Vicky because she lives in the village my uncle used to live in, and I used to go stay there as a kid. I liked her style with copywriting. It was refreshing to meet a UK person doing it well, as it seems most of the people I see online are US-based. So moral of this is, never second-guess why someone might be attracted to do business with you. I bet Vicky would never have thought it would be those reasons. Just put yourself out there and be good at what they do. People will choose you for their own reasons. That's really good advice from Tanya, because, you know, she never would have known that I lived in the village her uncle lived in if I hadn't talked about who I am and my life and what I do. And, you know, that was what made her go, oh, that's really interesting. And then, you know, she liked who I was and what I did and all the rest of it as well, because you have to be very good at what you do as well. It's not enough just to be a nice person. You can't, you know, you have to be good at what you do as well, because otherwise people will leave you fairly quickly.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you don't know what's going to tip people over the edge. You don't know, not tip them over the edge. what's going to cause somebody to move? You know, there are lots of different things that can cause people to move and take that action, like buying your book or, you know, buying your service or even just putting an inquiry into you. You never know what it's going to be, because you never know what's interesting to everybody, to different people, do you? So that's another reason to share more of yourself.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So share everything about yourself. But as you said, well, maybe not everything, we'll come back to that later. But as you said earlier, it's a really difficult thing to do. And the reason is that you are fighting against 3.8 billion years of evolution, basically. Because if you kind of think back to when human beings first evolved, I guess. We've evolved in a world that's made up of small, stable groups of interrelated people, basically. We've always thrived in social groups. It's one of the reasons we are so successful. We've also evolved to form tribes and to be suspicious of anybody who is different. Huh. And you only have to look back at our history to realise that, you know, look at genocides that have happened, look at the Holocaust, look at football hooliganism, Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland, apartheid. You know, it's all of that stuff is horrific, but it comes from, you know, our evolutionary need to form tribes and be suspicious of anyone who's different. Back then, it was a helpful thing, because anyone who was in a different group, a different social group, may well, you know, come and wipe you out. Nowadays, it's just a ridiculous hangover from, you know, from an evolutionary time. But the point is that that's how our brains are wired. So it's really, really difficult to fight against that, to stand out, because everything within our psyches and our DNA and everything screams at us to blend in. Because the opposite of blending in is standing out. And if you stick your head above the parapet like that, then there's every chance that people are going to point and laugh, or even, you know, exclude you from the social group entirely, which is actually mentally and physically damaging to people. So it's really, really difficult. It's really difficult. And you to kind of fight against that and to feel comfortable with standing out, you've got to undo 3.8 billion years of evolution and the faulty thinking that leads us nowadays to, you know, do the just let fear take over and paralyze us, basically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, it totally does. Yeah. And I think, like, for myself, I've always been like a bit of an extrovert, you know, and I did performing and stuff as a kid and things like that. So I didn't really mind making a tit myself. You know, I've never really minded it. It might not be a good thing at times, but it's just the way I am. But I guess even when I started in, you know, in business, I think maybe I had to sort of relearn how to be like that in my business, you know. So it must be even harder for people who are naturally a bit more introverted and shy and not very keen on, you know, like you said, putting their head above the parapet and stuff.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's a really good point to jump on, because a lot of people think that there's like a misconception about what introverts are, because I am an introvert. And I'm just going to explain this a little bit, because I don't want people listening and thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to find this really difficult because I'm an introvert and blah, blah, blah. I am an introvert, but my happy place is on stage performing. I love it. I love it. I mean, I might throw up, you know, 5 minutes before we go on because of nerves or whatever, but I love being the center of attention in that kind of a way. I love standing up in front of a room full of people and giving a talk. But at parties, I find it really difficult. It's an entirely different kettle of fish being at a party and being the center of attention, or being on a stage and being the center of attention. And I think introverts who are like me and who kind of like that kind of performance aspect of things will know exactly what I'm talking about, because introvert extrovert isn't really how outgoing you are. It's to do with where you get your energy from. And introverts like me draw our energy from being alone. We find being with people very, very draining, but extroverts draw their energy from other people. So it's like going out and partying and you know, having a great time. And it's like Joe knows me very well, and he will keep an eye on me, and because I am really crap at schooling my face. So all of my feelings shot on my face, and he'll look over at me if we're at a party or something. It's like, it's time to go now, isn't it? And I'll be like, yes, it is. So sort of like, you kind of like the partying and stuff, and you like the social interaction, but it's draining for introverts. So I think that's the difference. And just because you're introverted doesn't mean that you can't be really, really good at putting yourself out there and performing if you're on some kind of a stage rather than at a party. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, it does. Yeah. So when it comes to business, then why is this so important when it comes to business, and whatever business you're in, whether you're a dog trainer or whether you're a linguist or, you know, a copywriter or whatever the hell you're in, or a baker or a butcher or a candlestick maker, why is it important that you find your flamingo and be different? Why can't you offer a great service and just get paid decent money for doing that?
Well, I mean, you can. There's nothing to stop you from doing that. But, you know, that's kind of a minimum requirement of doing business. And, you know, the problem is there are a million other people doing what you do. You are not, you know, what you do, what you're offering isn't really unique. You know, what I'm offering isn't unique. Even what you're offering, Dom, isn't totally unique. You've found a niche, but you know, there are a lot of business groups out there. It's just that yours is pet focused, and I'm sure a lot more of them are going to pop up when you start to become a bit more well known, because this is the nature of what happens. Well, exactly, yeah. And you know, this is the nature of what happens. So it's, you know, there are a lot of people out there doing exactly what you do. There are a million dog walkers, there are a million dog trainers, and you know, like it or not, you're going to blend in. And the problem is that when you first start a business, you look around and see what everybody else is doing. And the reason you do that is again, evolution. It's like you look to other people to see how to behave in given situations. So if this is why, by the way, this is why the bystander effect happens. This is why it can look like a whole bunch of people don't care about somebody who is in need of help. Because if other people, because you look around, it's like, oh, somebody else will help them, and so everybody walks past and you look and you think, oh well, somebody else must be helping them, and everybody else is walking past, so there must be nothing wrong. And you know, that's why we do it in life, and it's also why we do it in business. We're like, oh, I don't know how much to charge. How much is everybody else charging? Oh, I'll charge the same. Or, oh, I don't know how to write my website. I don't know what to put on my homepage. What have other people put? Oh, okay, so that makes sense. And that's how you end up looking exactly like everybody else, and it makes perfect sense. You know, we all do it when we first start out. It makes perfect sense. But it's absolutely the worst thing to do, because you end up looking exactly like everybody else. And if you look exactly like everybody else, you only give people one option when choosing who to buy from, and that's price. And the last thing you ever want is for people to decide on price, ever. It's terrible. It's a race to the bottom.
Definitely, definitely. Couldn't agree more. And something that I'm always banging on about as well. And it's – Even with, I mean, when I started my business, I did, I think I did two things right, and that which complete, well, not really by accident. Some of it was by design, but then some of the effects of what I did happens kind of by accident. I didn't realize, and one of them was offering something different, like offering an adventure instead of a walk. And the other thing was like premium pricing from the start. And then from that, I kind of instantly positioned my, I didn't even know what positioning was back then, but I kind of instantly positioned myself as being better and different than everybody else, and yeah, I think my business was probably a bit slower to grow than if I'd just charged the same as everybody else. But yeah, I had better clients who obviously wanted something extra and were prepared to pay, and like, and they're still my clients to this day, a lot of them like 7 years down the line. So yeah, no, just that whole kind of price and being different things. So how can so how easy is it for anybody in any kind of business to be different?
It's really difficult, actually, and that's probably not the answer that anyone wants to hear. But it's if you ask somebody, and I get this every time I ask any business owner in any industry, what makes you different? Why should I choose you instead of the guy down the road? I will get every single time a variation on the theme of, we have excellent customer service, we give the best value, we get it right first time, we're the best at what we do, we go a little bit further than our competitors. And you know what? They are all a minimum requirement of running a good business. But worse than that, they're really generic answers. And even worse than that, they're really boring answers as well, because they all add up to who gives a shit. And if everybody's saying that, and everybody is saying that, it leaves your potential customers with no choice other than to decide on price. So then you think, well, okay, what does make me different? And when I start getting people to think about that, that's when they start to flounder, because it's really difficult. It is really difficult because you know your own business very, very well, and you're kind of embedded in it and all the rest of it. So, finding out what makes you better or different or whatever from the person down the road, it's tough. So I get people to start thinking about their business in terms of them, because for me it's like, yeah, you know what, there's a million other copywriters out there. Most of them are not as good as me, because frankly most copywriters are not very good. They don't understand the psychology of sales. A lot of them are a lot better than me because I've been doing it a lot longer, but none of them are me, none of them are Vicky. And that's the key. It's like, if you put your personality into what you do, into everything that you do, then people are going to have that to differentiate you. It's like, they might hate you. You know what? That's fine. They'll go and choose somebody else. You can't please everybody all the time. But some people will absolutely love you, and they will stay with you for 7 years as your original customers, your original clients for your dog adventures did. And the reason they stayed with you for 7 years isn't anything to do with your price or even the service that you provide or even what you do. It's because they like you.
Yeah, and that is key, isn't it? Yeah, and they're like for everybody. If you're a groomer, or if you're a trainer, or what, anything else, you putting your personality into it is a surefire way of sort of carving a little niche for yourself in the market, and pushing people away who aren't a very good fit for you, and then pulling those people towards you who will be your 7 year, 10 year clients, aren't they? And because they love you, but they'll never get to know you unless you embrace this whole, right, let's do something different. Let's put more of me into the business. And yeah, I think something, yeah, you're right about the whole, you are the one that makes a difference, but only if you speak up about yourself, only if you in some way put yourself into your business.
And I did a talk a few weeks ago at one of my clients' events, and it was all IT people. So it's like this not an interesting industry on the face of it. And they were all like, oh, we just do service level agreements and cloud stuff and blah blah blah. And it's like, but that's not all you do, and that's actually not what you do at all. And I was trying to get them to think in terms of what they do for people rather than what they provide, because with the best will in the world, people who buy IT services don't care at all about IT. I don't care. I just want my IT to work, and it gives me the rage when it doesn't. So if you can make my computer equipment and whatnot all work properly, and make sure that I don't lose any data, and all of that kind of thing, that's what I care about. I don't give a shit about cloud services. I don't care about servers. I don't even barely even know what a server is. And it's that kind of, but they get fixated on what they offer, rather than what they do for people. So the probably the biggest piece of advice I can give to anybody listening when you're thinking about what makes you different and how to find your USP is, first of all, don't rattle off six different things, because that's not a unique selling point, means one thing. and second of all, think about what it is that you provide for your customers and clients. And it might well be something that you hadn't even thought of. Because quite often, if you will talk to, go talk to your absolute best clients, the ones who pay you the most money and the ones who are the least pain in the bum, and ask them why they work with you. Get them talking. You know, don't do it in a kind of formal way. Take them out for lunch or something, and just get them talking. You know, oh, you know, why are you with me? You know, have you ever used anybody else? Why did you change from them? All the rest of it, and stuff will come out that you'd never even thought of, because it just wouldn't. It might be something really innocuous that you do that other people think is amazing, and that's the one thing that makes you really, really different.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what we've been doing in the induction. Yeah, and it's been fascinating. It's been also brilliant that you're saying the same thing, so they're not just saying it's me making this shit up. But no, and it's like it's fascinating, isn't it? In fact, I'll share this with you as well. Louise, who did this, she's one of the first ones to do this exercise, and I think I was talking about this in a video in my group this morning, and she wrote that she had the answers, you know, why the clients used her and what they liked about her, and she had some keywords and stuff, and some common keywords as well, because she'd asked a few, and she literally said, like, oh my goodness, my website is like writing itself, you know, my website copy is just like writing itself. Yeah. And I said, like, yes, exactly, you know, when you do this research, we think we know why we're different, but it's very interesting to get the client's point of view, isn't it? Like, you said, the best clients, yeah, who are the ones that we want, yeah, more of.
Exactly, yeah. And that's another really good point, actually, that I'm glad that she said it's writing her website for her, because if you can write your marketing copy, your marketing letters and brochures and website in the words that your customers are using at you, then that they're automatically going to be more predisposed to doing business with you, because you're using your words back at them. You're using their words back at them, the language that they use, their turns of phrase, all the rest of it. It's going to be like, oh my God, I feel like they really know me. And it sounds a little bit manipulative, but it's not really, because if you're doing an amazing job at what you do, then it's your duty to sell it to as many people as you can and help as many people as you can. Yeah. And the way to do that is to find out from them exactly what they value about you, and then give them more of it. And if you're really stuck, this is my other top tip for USP, if you're really, really stuck as to, you know, what makes you different or what your USP could be, then just make it up. you can totally make it up. Like, you know, there's no such thing as flamingo marketing, or there wasn't until I invented it a few weeks ago. So, you know, that's copyright. If anyone nicks it, I'll break the knee. But yeah, I mean, you know, Seth Godin does. I mean, it's not new. Seth Godin wrote a book called Purple Cow, and that's very much the same idea. Seth Godin is a marketing genius. But I had been thinking about, I love flamingos because they're pink and flamboyant and all the rest of it. And it's, you know, I decided, oh, you know what? That's going to be my USP, certainly for this new book that I'm writing and for the stuff that I'm going to do off the back of that, is, you know, flamingo your business. You know, flamingo, yeah, marketing, flamingo your webinars, flamingo your podcast. Like, I've got a whole series of things that I can do. It's like, I'm going to show you how to make this thing that you're doing, which is okay, really, really interesting.
Yeah, love it. I'm excited to see what you've got coming up, actually, which I'll no doubt be hearing more about when you come and speak at the boot camp as well.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be good again. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to it.
I'm going to come dressed as a flamingo. I might not be kidding.
Flamingo your boot camp.
Yeah.
So, when we're, how do we then? So once, when the clients come back to us, and they say, actually, two things I was going to say. The first thing is you'll be really surprised, won't you, as well, what they come back to you with. Like, yeah, you, because you obviously have a preconceived idea in your head of what your service offers. And for the likes of me, it could be like, oh, it's about fun and adventure and, you know, the dog getting exercise. But like, when the client might just come back and say, oh, well, I like the idea that you were carrying a tennis ball because, you know, I was worried that my dog was going to run out and get hit by a truck. You know what I mean? And like, that was, but it's, you know, and then when I'd be thinking, oh, Jesus, right. And then I think, well, if two people are saying that to me, then I know there's loads of people out there who are like shit scared that their dog's going to get hit by a truck when they're out with a dog walker, you know? So this is something, yeah, I need to be allaying their fears about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does it, I was just thinking, how do you kind of then like meld what you're doing, what you think is good about your business with what your clients think, you know, so that you, because the danger is that you kind of don't like what they're telling you, or you don't think it's important enough, and then you just do your own thing anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're going to ignore what your best clients are telling you, then frankly, you're a bit of a doofus. I haven't got no other way to put it. Because, you know, quite often the things that you think are important are, like I said before, they are minimum service requirements. And so many people are like, but I do give really good services. Like, so what? You should give really good service. If I'm paying you money for something, I want to make, you know, you damn well better give me good service, or I'm going to take my business elsewhere. And it's like, oh, you know, we always meet deadlines. It's like, again, that's a minimum requirement of doing business. It's like, even if there are a lot of crap people in your industry, that doesn't make the minimum requirements any less, if you see what I mean. It's all of that stuff that you think is amazing is actually mundane and boring. And if your clients are telling you, actually, this thing that you've done is amazing, then they are absolutely not going to be the only person that thinks that, because people are not, you know, people are not as unique as they like to think they are. Everybody's got a lot of stuff in common. We all, you know, our brains are all wired in the same way, more or less. And so the thing that client A thinks is amazing, you know, there's going to be a whole bunch more people out there that think is amazing as well. So yeah. Even if you don't particularly like what they're saying, I would suggest that you think about it and try and think about it in terms of, well, you know, how can I like what they're saying? Or even, you know, well, it's going to make me more money if that's the way you have to.
Yeah, you're dead right. And that goes back to what you said before about, like, essentially, they're telling you the benefits of your service, aren't they? They're saying, like, look, this is what gets me going. This is what I love about it. And yeah. You know, like I said before, if they're saying it, then that's exactly the same conversation that's going to be going on in a lot of your other prospects' heads. So you'd be a nugget, wouldn't you, not to somehow work that into your marketing message, or build a whole brand around it even.
Yeah, build a whole brand around it if you can. But yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. Well, you want to get to the point where people are shouting, shut up and take my money. You want to get to the point where it's like what you're offering people and, you know, what they are, you're meeting their needs in such a way that it's like, okay, the very last question that they're going to ask you is, how much is it? Because you want them to be like, oh my God, this is perfect for me. It's the perfect thing for my dog. You want to get them to that point. And the only way you're going to do that is to stand out and be totally different from everybody else in your market and find the people who think that you are absolutely amazing. It's not going to be everybody by any means, but you don't want everybody. You just want, you know, you just want the people who are like your people, you know, the people that are like you. And who like you. So if you can, oh, I forgot where I was going now. I had a point.
No, that's good. That's good. We'll come back. You can come back to it if you want.
I think I made my point.
I think to go back to the research thing before we move on again, a lot of my guys have been really surprised that when they've looked at what the competition's doing, like they've been surprised how similar they look, you know. They thought they were charging more. They thought they were doing different things. But actually, when they looked, it was a bit of an eye-opener, do you know what I mean, to see, oh, shit, actually, I'm not as different as I thought I was, you know, which is all the more reason to kind of – but why you really need to kind of push – you need to push the boundary a bit, don't you? Push yourself out of your comfort zone, I guess.
You definitely do, yeah, because, I mean – you know, the best one in the world, there is only so much that you can do to make yourself different. And you know, you, like you say, if they look around, they think, oh, I'm quite different. And then you look around and think, actually, I'm not, because, you know, the industry that you're in, it, like I said, you're all offering each other the same, you know, you're all offering your clients more or less the same thing. And so you've got to think about what you can pull out of your own life, your own personality to make you different. And the IT guys that I spoke to had this problem, even a bigger problem than you, because everybody loves dogs. Not everybody loves IT because it's boring. And I kind of pointed out to them, well, you know, that's not all you do. What do you do outside of your business? And they started to kind of perk up and be like, oh, you know what? I used to climb mountains. I've climbed Everest and Kilimanjaro. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, talk about that, because you're getting, there was another guy who built ham radios and amazing gadgets and ridiculous stuff in his shed. And it's like, well, that's really fascinating as well. You're building robots that are going to take over the world in your garden shed. And another guy who loves, this is going to sound really daft, but he loves fire stations. So he takes a lot of pictures of fire stations. And I was like, you could build a whole brand out of that. And, you know, and just because it's got nothing to do with the IT world, it doesn't matter. It's the personality thing and the personality marketing. And kind of talking about that stuff and having the guts to talk about that stuff does indeed mean stepping right out of your comfort zone and doing the stuff that's really, really, you know, really terrifying to you. You don't have to jump in and do the massive scary thing all at once. You can do it, you know, I like to call it tiny beetle steps because they're smaller than baby steps, but you know, you do a little thing at a time. It's like you share something that nobody knows about you. Just do it quietly, see what happens. You know, I can almost guarantee that nobody will say anything mean to you, you know, because people generally are quite nice. I can give you a few other examples for how you can do this as well, if you would like me to.
Yeah, for sure. I was just going to, I was just going to ask about, you know, how do we get the confidence to do this and how do we take these, how do we get started, really? So, yeah.
Okay, so I'll jump back a little bit. Ask me in a minute a few things that people can kind of do to make themselves stand out if they're not sure what the USP should be. But we'll hop back a bit and think about how you can kind of get the courage to do it almost. And it's basically changing your thinking, because like I said, you've got to fight against, you know, 3.8 billion years of evolution. It's a scary thing to do. And your mind is, you know, your mind is incredibly powerful. This is my friend, who's also called Vicky, is a life coach, but, you know, is a good life coach. She's not, you know, she's not like, she's hilarious. She says, your mind is so powerful. Your thoughts will make or break you, and you are free to think as you want, whenever you want. And that's really true. And another thing that I'm going to point out is that you cannot control a lot of what happens to you, but you can always control your reaction to it. And that gives you an awful lot of power over how you feel about everything, because it's like when you hear somebody say, oh, that makes me really mad. It's like, no, it doesn't make you really mad. You have decided to become angry because of that thing that has happened to you. As soon as you change the way you think about things like that, you start to realize that actually you're in control of an awful lot more of your life than you might think you are. And that goes for, this is relevant because, you know, you might be thinking that you don't want to, something is too scary to do, and you're, you know, it might stop you from doing the things that you want to do. I'm going to give you a few faulty thinking things.
Brilliant.
That
yeah,
might change. So, okay. So these are, I can give you a couple of stories as well that you know, might make you laugh. Anyway, the first faulty thinking mechanism is all or nothing thinking. And that means that, you know, you think everything's black and white. It's either amazing or terrible. So when something goes really well, it's the best thing ever and life is wonderful and all the rest of it. And when something happens that's perhaps not so good, everything immediately turns to crap. And it's just like, you know, it's like somebody might leave your, and Dom, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about here. If somebody leaves my membership group for half an hour, I'll be like, oh, I might as well set fire to the whole thing. The whole thing's pointless.
Yeah. We talk about this now and again, don't we?
Yeah. Because you take it really, really personally. It's like, hang on a minute, that's one person. It's one person. Somebody else is going to join soon. And, you know, it's fine. And so that's the first thing. And we all do it. We all do it. But it's kind of catching that thinking and stopping and thinking, hang on a minute, am I being rational here? And the answer to that question is almost always no. And then you can be, okay, well, let's just have 5 minutes of feeling like crap, because you've got to have a little bit of self-indulgence. And then you can look at everything objectively and think, okay, well, that happened. How am I going to fix it or move on or do the next thing? So that's my first thing. My second thing, and this is really relevant.
What would we call that?
We call that all or nothing thinking.
All or nothing. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, it's either wonderful or it's all, you know, the world's ending.
Yep.
And neither of those things is true, really. Mm-hmm. It's always somewhere in the middle. So the second thing, and this is really relevant for stepping out of your comfort zone and doing the fun stuff, is mind reading. I am an expert mind reader, Dom. I don't know about you. Mm. I am totally convinced I have genuine telepathic powers, because I already know that everybody who is going to read my next book is going to hate it. I know that. They're going to hate it. It's terrifying. They're going to hate me, and they are never, ever going to buy anything from me. And it's ridiculous, you know, because it's ridiculous because it's almost certainly not true. And B, you don't know what's in people's heads. And so, you know, I could put this in a non-business sense, and you can kind of translate it to a business thing. But so if I'm wearing a new dress and it's different from all of my other dresses, and I'm out and about, I might see somebody turn to their friend or whisper something, then they giggle. And because in my head I'm feeling a little bit insecure about this dress that looks different, I decide that they're thinking, she looks ridiculous. She looks like a chimney sweep. And what they're probably doing is they hadn't even seen me, and they were having a conversation all on their own. But you you're kind of what happens is that your insecurities crawl out of, you know, the holes in your brain and spill out of your face and imprint themselves onto what other people are thinking. And one thing that I've learned from years of therapy is that quite often people aren't thinking about you at all. You know, they're worrying about their own shit. So all of this crazy stuff that's going on in your head, other people have got all this crazy stuff going on in their heads as well. So whenever you're kind of, oh my God, everyone's going to laugh at me, or that person over there hates me, or why is that person scowling? I've obviously upset them. It's like, no, they've probably just stubbed their toe. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're almost never thinking about you, are they?
although they are almost never thinking about you. Yeah.
I've just thought of something which kind of covers both of those points. You could have a little drink of water if you need one. The all or nothing thinking and the mind reading thing. This, I say this quite a bit with when we're talking about pricing, you know, and increasing prices, because my pet business people, when they first come in, it's like, oh, if I put my prices up, everyone's going to leave, and this, you know, that this is the fear that they have, and often, even when they, or it might not even be a client, but it could be like their spouse or like their friend who's saying, or the partner who's saying, you know, oh, don't do that because this might happen, and then that seeps into your brain, doesn't it, and it gets you, or they might. Maybe roll a price increase out. They might speak to the client who they're worried about anyway, who really probably isn't a very good client for them. And then the client will kick off, and then that'll put them off putting the prices up completely anyway, you know? So it's like, you've got to be so careful, haven't you? With that all or nothing thinking, and like, you know, it's assuming, I guess, that what's going to happen.
Yeah. And also, yeah, that asking, because your friends and family are well-meaning and they love you and they want the best for you, and quite often don't have a clue about business and how to run a business. And so their opinions on this stuff are meaningless. And that sounds really harsh, but they are. I love my mum. She's great. If she offered her opinion on how I should run my business, I'd smile and ignore her, because she knows nothing about running a business. So, you know, if you're going to, and oh my God, the number of times that, you know, you hear people say, oh, well, you know, I thought I was going to close this, but then, you know, the potential client said he had to go and ask his wife. And it's like, what? Why? Why is his wife like a business partner? Is it, you know, does, it's like, oh my God, do not listen to well-meaning but ill-informed people, because they will put seeds of doubt in your head, and they are almost always wrong. So, you know, this pricing thing is a really good one. It's like you already know, you somehow know that putting your prices up is going to be a terrible idea and all your customers will leave you. When in actual fact, if you put your prices up by 10%, 99% of your customers won't even notice. Maybe a couple of them will make a comment and then carry on and pay anyway. And, you know, maybe the tiny proportion that does leave you, if any of them, will be more than covered by the price increase with everybody else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all this stuff that's like massive in your brain is nowhere, when you don't know what's going on in other people's heads, basically. You really don't.
No, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted your,
no, that's okay.
Your floor there. Well, have we got another one?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of talked about what if thinking as well. That's like, what if chronic what if is, it's like, you know, what if, the world explodes. Like, well, you know what? The world might explode. You can't do anything about that. So that's kind of. But the one I wanted to talk about was catastrophizing, mostly because I've got a story about it.
Okay.
This is a really good illustration of how catastrophizing works. So some weeks ago, Joe's my husband, had just come back from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is a martial art in which a large sweaty man sits on your chest and tries to twist your head and limbs off, as far as I can gather. He had had a particularly gruesome session and was sitting on the sofa in his dressing gown looking a bit broken, and I was cooking dinner. The following thoughts take place over less than 10 seconds. Ooh, Joe looked really ill. I hope he's all right. God, what if he has a stroke? What was that groaning noise? Oh my God, he's had a stroke. How can I get him to the hospital fast enough to fix him? What if he doesn't recover? I'm going to lose the house. Oh my God, the cats and chickens will have to fend for themselves. Our lives will be in tatters and our dreams will be broken. What will we do? At which point, I barreled into the living room shrieking, are you okay? What's going on? Should I call an ambulance? And Joe's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? He's sitting on the sofa right now, wetting himself laughing because he's listening.
That's the second time I've heard. I'm still laughing.
But But that is what's called catastrophizing. And it's like, you know, we do it in our businesses as well. If this one thing that I'm doing doesn't work, the whole enterprise is doomed and I'm going to have to go and work in Sainsbury's. And it's, you know, if I stick my neck out and people, you know, people see me and then I fail, everything is ruined. And it's just not true. It's the way we are wired. We are hardwired to think that way. So don't think that you're a crazy person. Because I thought I was a crazy person. And I talked to a psychologist and she's like, no, everybody does that. So maybe not in quite such graphic detail as I did it. But, you know, it's... so this whole kind of stepping out of your comfort zone thing, what is, you know, what is really the worst thing that's going to happen? Maybe possibly somebody might laugh at you. You know what? They're probably not going to anyway. And even if they do, is it really the end of the world? Are you going to let that stop you from doing something that could be amazing? Because you only get one life. You know, you're going to be dead in 50 years or so. And none of this matters then. So, you know, think of it that way. You know, what could you do now that could make a real difference to your life, your business and your customers' businesses? And then, you know, grow a pair and do it.
Yeah, grow a pair. Yeah, because you're dead right. And like if you're in business, you've chosen... You've chosen to do something a little bit different, haven't you? You've chosen to, you've already stepped outside your comfort zone to a degree, so you might as well go the whole fucking hog and,
yeah,
you know, have a different kind of business.
Yeah, you can. And, you know, stop thinking of failure as having a capital F as well, because, you know, until you're actually shuffling off this mortal coil, no failure has a capital F. It's not life and death stuff. You know, little fails are learning opportunities. And if you can take something useful away from it, then I don't think it's a failure at all. You know, if something goes wrong, look at why it went wrong and then how you can fix it or what you do differently next time. Or, you know, take that lesson from it and apply it to doing things better in the future, I guess. Oh, also stop comparing yourself to other people. Because that is a recipe for misery. Is I think Theodore Roosevelt said comparison is the thief of joy, and Rob Lowe, who is amazing, said don't compare your insides to someone else's outsides, because what you see other people doing is what they choose to show you. It's not necessarily what's going on inside. So stop looking around at what others are doing and comparing yourself unfavorably to them, and start doing your own thing.
Yeah, love it. So that's brilliant. I wanted to what I want to go back a little bit too, Vicky. I want to go back to we mentioned about we've been talking about personality the whole time and putting in personal stories. You know, using stories, using your own kind of stories is a brilliant way to communicate anything, really, isn't it? You know, whether you're doing a talk or an email or on your website and stuff, it's like. That's something that people can't rob from you, can they? You know, they can't steal from you, they can't copy from you, your own personal why you're doing what you're doing.
Exactly, yeah. And they can't copy who you are. They can try and they will look stupid and it'll be very hard work for them, because, you know, trying to be somebody that you're not is incredibly difficult. It's exhausting, as you will know if you've ever tried to live up to somebody's expectations and they don't fit in with who you are. You know, if people have had parents perhaps that they don't get on so well with, or somebody they want to impress, you'll know how exhausting it is trying to live a life that isn't yours. So yeah, being yourself is a lot easier. But if you're looking for stories to tell, then start with the reason that you're doing the thing that you do. Your why is a really good place to start, because everybody has a slightly different reason for doing what they're doing, and it's almost never, in fact, I would say never, it's never really to do with how much money. It's like, don't get me wrong, I like money. You know, money allows me to do all sorts of things. But the money itself is not the reason I do it. It's what it enables me to do. So, you know, the reason that I do what I do is partly because I find human brains absolutely fascinating. And basically that is, you know, it's the psychology of persuasion is what I do. It's really, 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 really interesting. And I love seeing people get results. For me, that is... You know, I love it when people come to me and say, oh my God, I've just doubled my income in 2 months. And I'm like, oh my God, and it's just completely awesome, you know? And, you know, so that's kind of one of my reasons for doing what I do. Another one is because I'd like to make a big pile of cash so that I can open a donkey sanctuary or something. So, you know, we all have different reasons for doing what we do. And that's really, really important. And people will connect with that reason, because if you can show people that, you know, a lot of people are suspicious of business owners and, you know, people who have made their own money, because it's like, oh, you know, bloody capitalists and blah, blah, blah. If you can show people that you've actually got a deeper reason for doing what you do, that's another reason. I don't think there's anything wrong with just making money at all. You know, I'm a stone cold capitalist through and through.
Therefore.
But I think that there are good things that you can do with your money and good things that everybody should do with their money. So think about why you do what you do and really what, you know, what you offer to people. And it's always going to be deeper than, especially with dog owners and dog people, it's always going to be deeper than just to make a living. It's like, you know, I know for you, Don, one of your big passionate things is dog rescues and, you know, how we can make those better. And that's a really cool thing. And that will, you know, resonate really strongly with people who cry at roadkill like me. I cry when I see bunnies on the road. So that's one way to kind of bring your stories out, is start with why you do what you do and tell people that, because they will, you know, they will be interested. And
yeah, and if everyone, you know, everyone's got, it doesn't need to be like, you know, it doesn't need to be like a proper Road to Damascus story, but it, you know, everybody, your story will pull people in, just because stories do, don't they? And and we'll talk about that maybe in a second, but why stories are so like powerful, why you need to have one, I guess, why you need to have a story of why you're doing your own thing. But just I just did a Facebook Live with Trish, you know, who was at the boot camp as well. And she was talking about how the, like, everything was better. Like, part of my mission is like to help, I want to help people have better relationships with their dogs, but I want to help pet business owners have a better relationship with, you know, make more money and help more people, you know. And Trish gave like a fantastic example of like her putting her prices up meant that she valued our service more, but also she was getting like much more compliance, you know, like when she walked in the room to do the session, like the television was off, and it just changed overnight, you know. And consequently she's getting better results now. She hasn't changed anything really with as regards to how she trains dogs, but just the whole, do you know what I mean? It's like it's powerful, isn't it? You know, once you your why is powerful.
It's very powerful, yeah. Yeah, it is, definitely. Have an opinion as well. I mean, that's another way to kind of stand out. I'll come back to the storytelling thing in a minute, but you know, have an opinion as well, because, you know, could be quite crude about this, but your opinions are what makes you stand out. Because, you know, I will put a small caveat on that, because if you hold strong opinions on stuff you don't know anything about, it makes you look like an idiot and people will justifiably mock you. So I'm talking about, for example, anti-vaxxers, people who refuse to vaccinate their children because they think they know more than doctors. Those people are idiots. And because they are not doctors, they don't, you know, they don't know anything about what they're talking about. They've just decided they've got this strong opinion on something they know nothing about. But if you have, you know, if you're a dog training expert, you have strong opinions on how dogs should be trained, and that's fine, because you're an expert in what you do, and people will, you know, people will listen to you because of that. If you've got other strong opinions on other areas of life that aren't related to your business, and you can back them up with, you know, knowledge and facts and all the rest of it, then talk about them, because that it's a way of polarizing people. You know, some people will agree with you, some people won't, and the people who don't agree with you will usually just ignore you and go do something else. Occasionally they might send you hate mail, which is great because you can use it in your marketing. It's funny. And the ones who agree with you will agree with you even more strongly. I'll be like, oh, this is my people. You know, this is the people that I want to align myself with, because, you know, they have the same opinions as me and they have the same values as me and all the rest of it. So that's really important as well. And you could turn all of this stuff into stories. And shall I neatly segue that into stories?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, perfect.
Cool.
Seamless.
Okay. Seamless. You can barely see the joints. So... So stories, storytelling. Okay, so going right back to, you know, 40, 60,000 years ago, the cave paintings in Lascaux is pretty much the start of storytelling, I think. Certainly written storytelling anyway. We've been telling stories for as long as we can communicate with each other. And we are, you know, our brains are wired for story. This is how we remember stuff. I think Rudyard Kipling said, if history were taught in the form of stories, it would never be forgotten. And it's true. It's really true. We teach people cold, hard facts. We're not wired to remember them. They're boring. And it fires. I talk about all this in quite a lot of detail in my book, so I won't go into too much of it. Yeah. But you know what it's like when you're reading a book and you get really, really into it and you're actually there. I don't know about you, but I actually see things in colour in my head when I'm reading a book, and I hear things and the characters speak in their own voices that I make up in my head. And sometimes, you know, you'll look up and you think, oh, what time it is? I need a wee or whatever. And it's like 3 in the morning and you thought it was 10 o'clock. And that's what a good story will do for you. It draws you in and you remember them. And you might not remember all the fine and minute details, but you remember the story and you remember the way it made you feel. And that's the really important thing, is that you're trying to get people to feel something with your marketing, because if they don't feel it, if they don't feel anything, nothing will happen. They won't reach into their wallets and pull out their money. You have to make people feel something. And the absolute best and easiest way to do that is to tell some kind of a story that draws them in, that means that they are feeling what you want them to feel, and you're leading them down a path that, you know, usually is from I've got a problem all the way to, oh my God, I can, you know, I feel better already just, you know, just having read this story that you've told me about how you can help me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I'm forever collecting stories and telling people to be collecting stories, and I think certainly for my guys, I think maybe this is true for most businesses, but you might know better than me, but certainly for my guys, when you're talking about what you do and how it affects people, we tend to fall back on the technical side of it, you know, so like, yeah, the dog is bad, we will use a clicker to make him good, you know, but whereas, you know, if you start that with, if you package that up as a story, you know, like, oh, this happened, you know, 10 years ago, this happened with this owner whose dog almost got hit by a train or something. And then, you know, and then straight away, you're like, oh my God, what, you know, how did you fix that then? You know, because, and it's, I think people get over it quite quickly. And as soon as they do, they start seeing better results. But it's like a common thing. Is that common for most businesses, you think, to shy away from?
Yeah, absolutely is. You know, almost everybody, it's the curse of knowledge. You know a lot about what you're talking about. You know a lot about what you do. And so you talk about the thing that you do and the ins and outs and the technicalities of it. And actually your customer doesn't care about all that stuff. They have a problem. It's causing them pain and they want somebody to solve it for them. It is as simple as that. And, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that you can do around that, but you really have to understand where your customer is at the moment and what they are feeling and meet them where they are. Because the big mistake that most business owners make, is they're like, oh, I've got this thing and it's going to be great. And actually your customer is like, you know what, I'm feeling like crap right now. I can't even imagine a time when I'm going to be feeling better. So you just kind of waving your, you know, solution in my face like it's the be all and end all. They can't even connect with it, because you haven't shown them that you get it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when you've got a toothache, toothache's a really good example of this, and there is nothing in the world except your toothache, because it hurts that much. It takes up your entire world. You can't remember what it was like not to be in pain, and you can't imagine a time when you are ever not going to be in pain again. that's kind of what it's like for your customers if they've got a problem. It's like, oh, I can't take my dog for a walk because every single time he attacks other people's dogs, and it's just, you know, you're terrified of taking him out, you're humiliated, all of this stuff that's going on, they're right in the middle of that pain right now. And for you to kind of come along and say, oh, I've got this brilliant thing, they're like, just piss off, I'm not interested, I'm hurting, I'm over here hurting.
They can't even imagine really that, can they? They can't even imagine that, like, a happy place they can't. Not painting at the moment.
Exactly, yeah. So you have to take them on a journey from their intense pain to the happy place of your solution, and you have to start where they are right now. And the absolute best way to do that is with a story. So you talk about, you know, you and I did this ages ago, didn't we, Donna? It was like, you know, oh my God, Fido, would you come back, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. And it's like, that's where you start with that intense feeling of embarrassment, and then you walk them through, you know, the problems that it causes. You walk them, you tell them the story of people that you've helped, and even better, get the people that you've helped to tell their story for you, because they'll do it better than you can. And then you can adapt it and use it in your marketing. But that's the power of storytelling, is you start right from the beginning and you take it through right to the end, which is hopefully going to be them giving you money for helping them. But you can't miss out any of those elements. You have to start from where they are at the moment and then walk them through and answer all of their questions, overcome all of their objections. And you can't brush anything under the carpet if you're like, oh, you know, I can't bring that up because, you know, people, it might worry people. It's like, well, they're going to be thinking about it whether you bring it up or not. So you have to make it a part of your story and then overcome it. And then you get people to the point where it's like, you know, I don't care how much it is, I want it, I need it.
Yeah,
and that's kind of how stories work in marketing, really.
Yeah, you do. You meet them where they're at, don't you? And then you take them to where you show them a better place, and then that's which is the benefits of your solution. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, fantastic, Vicky. Fantastic. Anything else you want to? Have we missed anything important out about this whole Be More Flamingo?
I don't think. Well, you know, there's loads. loads more.
I know
stuff
we have
I
a book.
Say,
have we got a book title yet, Vicky, or not that we can plug?
We have. It's Flamingo Your Business. Ooh, and if you like want, if you want to, if you want to get in there on the priority notification list, you can go to vickyfraser.com/flamingo. And I will let you know when the book is available for purchase. I'm aiming for a release date in April at the moment, barring, you know, everything going pear-shaped. So, yeah.
April, vickyfraser.com/flamingo. Fantastic.
Yeah, it covers all of this and more. And if you're coming to Dom's boot camps, which you absolutely should, I will be covering a bunch of this stuff there. In fact, I was just thinking I could do a whole session on storytelling.
Yeah, that'd be fab.
Possibly. Anyway, but yes, yeah. I'll certainly be there, and I'll be come to Dom's bootcamp was so awesome last time, and I'm not even a pet business owner. It was great.
Thank you, and you were fab too, Vicky. So so that's the book that's coming up. You've also got another book out, Vicky, which is a cracking read. And some of my PBIC members have already read it, and they love it, and they're big fans of yours. So what's the other book?
Oh, the other book is Business for Superheroes, and you can get that at businessforsuperheroes.com.
Wunderbar.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And she's got a podcast too.
I have. Also, the Business for Superheroes show, vickyfraser.com/podcast. That's me and Joe, my husband Joe, who's very involved in my business. And we basically drink gin and talk about business and marketing, really. So,
yeah, it's good.
And sometimes I interview people. There's an interview with Dom on there somewhere. So, yeah, so it's very cool. I need to have you on again, Dom, this year.
Yes, let's do that. When we get our other secret project up and running.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, shut up. Okay.
Lovely jubbly. Well, thank you very much, Vicky. You've been absolutely marvellous, as you always are. And I'm sure everyone will get a lot of value from that. And I hope
thank you for having me.
To give everybody the confidence to put themselves out there a bit more and dominate their local area, make more money, help more people.
Yes, that's what it's all about.
I thought you'd gone again.
Yeah, don't let, you know, everybody gets... No. I was wondering if I was going to cough, sorry. Everybody is scared of doing this stuff, even the people who look fearless. They just don't... The difference is they don't let the fear stop them. And that's, you know, that's the difference. So
definitely. But on that note, we'll finish there. So thank you very much, Vicky. I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Dom. It's been great.
Bye-bye.